my job is to introduce our speaker tonight, and like Ken said, this has been a work in progress. One night after a meeting, decided to call Chris, and David J. got his number for us, and just ask him next time he was on the East Coast if he'd stop by and talk with us, or give us his talk, and he said, sure, no problem. Now, keep in mind, this is back in January of 2008. He said, I'm going to be over there in October. I said, 9 months is okay. We can wait. He said, no, October of 2009. So you can imagine we've been waiting a long time, and the wait is well worth it. For you guys that have heard Chris, you know it. You know it is well worth it. For you guys that haven't heard Chris, you're in for a damn treat. Help me welcome Chris.
Golly. Golf ball guy over there. That's the best. I can't believe I didn't bring my camera. My name's Chris Raymer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. Delighted to be here. I was talking to my wife this afternoon. She said, well, how are those people in South Carolina, not North Carolina, wherever the hell I am? And I said, listen, they're nice. They got me off the airport, and we ate a pig. And each. And I'm just telling her from the hotel, I'm going to run over there and give this little A&A talk to this little AA group. And it's just pretty cool. Nice that we could double it up. I got to talk at a conference over in South Carolina in tomorrow. And so it was cool that we could do this. And look at this. It's like, screw South Carolina. Are we just going to stay here? You know, this is, yeah, what a nice crowd. Bless your hearts for coming. I'm going to watch that old clock, guys. Trust me, I won't keep you long. Share a few thoughts with you, some experience, my truth, my truth, based on my experience, may differ from your truth, based on your experience. Y'all see where I'm coming from? There's people. Alcoholics Anonymous is just full of people that are sitting around waiting to be pissed off. You know, what's he gonna say that I could disagree with? You know, and it's like, God, you think we'd be more open-minded. We tell the newcomer, God, you want to get sober, you got to be open-minded. And then we get about 5, 15, 20 years under our belt, and we just become rigid. You know, it's like, well, my counselor said this, and, you know, my sponsor said this, and, you know, I've said it from a million podiums all over the world. I'm not real concerned with what your counselor said, not real concerned with what your sponsor said. If it differs from what the big book says, they may want to look at it. And that's the only place I'm coming from. I get the butt of every joke out there. The people, oh, that Chris Raymer, he's too rigid. I had a lady call from Iowa. A guy called and asked me to speak a couple years from now. And I penciled him in. I said, okay, we can do that. And then 3 days later, he calls me back and says, God dang, I didn't know it was going to cause that kind of a shit storm. You know, it's like, and he uninvited me, you know, which is fine. I mean, it happens all the time. But somebody in Iowa hates my guts, you know, and that's okay. That's okay. But I'm not the controversial one. And I don't cuss so much from the podium anymore, but I'm the cat that comes straight out of the big book. And so if you can't reconcile it, my sponsor said you might want to forget it. The steps are so open and roomy. You know, I really don't care how you work the steps. You want to do a third step with a bunch of people or on your knees or standing up or naked. I don't care. You four step however you want. The book is pretty open and roomy. In fact, if you call GSO in New York and ask them, well, what's the message of Alcoholics Anonymous? They will tell you, because we did, it's whatever your group wants it to be, which is pretty cool for staying out of a fray. You know, if you don't want to stand for anything, just like, well, whatever. I don't have an argument with that. But the big book we got in 1939 talks about a precise way to recover. Bill Wilson and the first guys, they started writing this stuff down so that we could maybe see the success rates they were having continue. And the further we've gotten into this, moving away from the message, the less successes that we have. And so there's a lot of us out there. I mean, look at this room, guys. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I was speaking. I'm giving the same message from the podium, and there would be six people in here. You know, I mean, truly, we just didn't talk to big crowds. And we're at state conferences now, people talking about the program. See, Bill Wilson understood that this whole thing, to put it together, is there's this fellowship, which is what we do in our meetings a lot of times, and this conference this weekend, and what we did today at lunch. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is the coolest. I mean, I always pass out cards, and you guys stay in touch, and it's just so nice to see that little ring of buddiness. You know, it's just people all over the world, and we can stay in touch. The fellowship is cool. But so many areas, they've just forgotten the program. My book says if you can stay sober just on the fellowship, you're not one of us. You're not the real McCoy. And so if you're a little disco drunk, it just happened to right in here. People get grindy about it. I mean, I had a guy just storm the podium after I talked over in California not long ago, because I introduced myself sometimes. I'm a real alcoholic. Bill Wilson spends dozens of pages in there talking about, but what about the real alcoholic? He wants us to see. He talks about moderate drinkers. He talks about hard drinkers. He talks about fried pie fruitcakes. He talks about lots. And we've got some of those in here, I'm sure. And that's like, but the real alcoholic has got some specific symptoms. And if you've got these symptoms, it's chronic and it's fatal. That's what it means, chronic. It's, you're going to die from this if you don't get well. And so to stand up here and water this little message down, for me, that seems to be the controversial thing. You could, again, you could do this any way you want. But if you're the real alcoholic, Bill Wilson says, there's one way to do it. We work the 12 steps. At a pretty good clip, he makes a point of saying, he doesn't want us to take our time. Losers. He wants us to do this rapidly so that we can have the full impact of this spiritual experience. If alcoholism is truly killing you and you believe you're powerless, why in the hell do you want to take your time to work the steps? The steps don't fix me, but the steps get me spiritually connected to a God that I may not even understand or even want to understand. But I guarantee you, you work the steps, you're going to have a spiritual experience. Nobody's ever done it, not experienced it. The spiritual experience removes the obsession to drink. I have a daily reprieve. If I don't do anything stupid in a couple of weeks, I'll have 22 years. Yeah, from a guy that couldn't stay sober 22 days. It took me 7 years to finally get a 30-day chip. I'm a meeting-making fool. I'm a chick picking up fool. I don't even know. I don't know. So, let me just reiterate now, and I'll move on because time's ticking. I don't want to say anything that's going to upset anybody or offend anybody. If I say something that doesn't jive with you and you want to visit about it, I would be more than glad to do that. I really don't want to, but I would do it. But I'd be glad to. Because I don't think there's an individual way. Bill Wilson wrote extensively about it. Dr. Bob wrote it extensively. There's no individual way to do this. We open and roomy, lots of ways to kind of interpret the steps, but the steps are not open for discussion. You're going to do it or you're not going to do it. And so we have millions of people sitting around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous today, never worked the steps, and they're the SOBs that want to take shots at the people that do. And it drives me crazy. It drives me to distraction. Some of you are already getting irritated. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 doors out of this place. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I work for a treatment center. One of the reasons that I get so passionate about this is that I get to see. I was one of those cats that said I'd never work for a hospital, and I ended up doing some clerical work, and I was going to do it for a few months, until a sacking job at HEB opened up, a grocery store, so I could make some real money. And I, 16 years later, I'm still at this hospital, and I get to watch lots of alcoholics and addicts come through that place, and I get to watch a lot of people suffer. The problem is not getting them to come in here and look at the steps. And the problem is getting them to unlearn a lot of stuff that they've already learned in the fellowship. We ruined a lot of people. Sometimes a crappy presentation of the program is worse than no presentation of the program. Most people, what they get is the same thing I got in 1980 when I first started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, which was go to lots of meetings and everything will be okay. Just don't drink and go to meetings. You know, if it's the best we can come up with, go shoot yourself. I don't know what to tell you. Because if you're a real alcoholic and all you're going to do is go to meetings, you're not going to get well. I'm not knocking meetings. I go to meetings. Y'all understand that? This is where we the camaraderie. You got to have both pieces of this. Don't get me wrong, but this idea of pushing meetings to stay sober is ludicrous. Dr. Bob said in some quotes, I've verified it by a couple of archivists. He talks about there's two ways to recover from alcoholism. There's a hard way and an easy way. Just going to meetings is the hard way. You'll follow? Because at that point, it's a self-help program. I'm going to go to a meeting today, one day at a time, and I'm not going to drink today. And then tomorrow, I'm going to go to another meeting, and I'm not going to drink today. But who's keeping you sober? God? No. The group? Yeah. You? Yeah. And if you're the real McCoy, you can pull that off for a while. But if you're the real McCoy, you're not going to be able to do that. Bill Wilson spends 20 pages in the book. He's got from page 23 to 43. There's 20 pages, and he talks about this mental obsession. He spends the first 20 pages talking about this phenomena called craving. The symptoms of alcoholism are the phenomena of craving. Normal people don't have it. When I start to drink, can I guarantee you how much I'm going to drink? No. Honey, I'm going to go get a drink. Don't get drunk. I'm not going to get drunk. All I'm taking is $10. I mean, how drunk can you get on $10? You with us? Somewhere, somehow, about 9 o'clock, I found a way to get a little more money. Went back to the money machine. Thank God. Oh, my gosh. And I'm off the race. But it was my intention to go have a couple of cocktails after work. Go to happy hour. Write it. I get it. Hey, where y'all going? We're not happy enough yet. You know, let's just take it. And then we close the place down. I ain't kidding. I've laughed about it all over the world. You know, there's people out there that call themselves alcoholic that honestly have never been in a bar at closing time. They don't know what it's like to close a bar down. I cannot relate. I just can't relate. There were many a time I said I was going to go for 1 hour, maybe two, and then I was going to go home and take care of business. But once the craving kicks in, and it doesn't happen every time I drink. And that's what makes this thing so dadgum frustrating. I was a functioning alcoholic for many years. I was talking to Billy. We're in the food business, and I was a professional chef. And I mean, good gosh, if every time you drank, you drank it to a blackout, you wouldn't be working too many places. You know what I mean? They'd lock you up eventually. And I had a long history of working in corporate America and holding it together. But as the disease gradually progresses, it gets less and less likely that you can hit that target, that you can drink a little bit. And we become, the book says, downright goofy after a couple of drinks, and our bodies start to wear out, and we can't metabolize the alcohol. But you couple that, if that was the only problem, guys, then detox centers would crank out 100% recovered people. Y'all down with that? I mean, it freaks me out in this country with all this healthcare stuff. Detox centers all over the world, insurance companies, will pay for your detox. He's an alcoholic, we'll get him detoxed. We're going to have to detox him next week because he ain't going to stay sober, but we'll be glad to, you know. Oh, my gosh. Instead of paying for treatment or helping these guys understand this mental obsession piece, that's why I'm so fanatical about it, because they're not going to hear about it in most treatment centers. Where they're going to hear about it, good Lord's willing and the creek don't rise, if they come into an AA group, somebody's going to grab them around the neck and explain what this disease really is. You with us? It had nothing to do with the way you were potty trained. It has to do with the fact that you were genetically wired this way. Guys, alcoholism is genetic. And it's this. I mean, 10 years ago, I suppose you could have argued it, but the jury's in. Most of us as alcoholics and addicts can look back up that old family tree as alcoholics and give it a good kick, and they'll drop out by the dozens up on the top. You know. There's Uncle Charlie. Watch out. And addictions along those lines. And so, but this is fatal and chronic, and it's like, back in the day before the treatment centers got us, we used to sit in these rooms and watch us die, you know, watch us seize, detox it. We don't do that anymore. They're off in hospitals doing that. So everybody begins to think that this is some kind of a social entity. We were a social entity today. We used to be a spiritual entity. We were a bunch of little big book thumpers in action going to grab another little drunk and helping them get well. And that's what I think we need to get back to. And so, and some people just don't flat want to do that much work. So I can relate to that. I'm with you. You combine the physical allergy with the mental obsession, folks, and it's a lose-lose situation, and it will eat you up. The big book says on page 24 that we have lost the power of choice in drink, that our so-called willpower will become practically non-existent. And that's why anything in treatment that tells you that you can stop yourself from drinking, that's why I'm not a big fan of that Living Sober book that Alcoholics Anonymous produces. We're in a big push to get them to stop publishing it. They probably won't because they make so much money on it. But if any of you little new guys in here are reading this little book called Living Sober, throw it out the back door as fast as you can, because it'll kill you. Again, it leads you to believe that you can keep yourself sober and you won't work the steps. You'll follow? Oh, you should have seen the room. A lot of y'all reading that damn piece of trash, aren't you? Woo! You can see the ripple. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I'm just saying. This is what nearly got me killed because of the mixed messages that I heard in 1980 when I first got to this fellowship. If I'm truly powerless over alcohol, then that means no human. Do we read the ABCs? I mean, no human power can relieve what's wrong with me. Then why am I so concerned about all of these little self-help tricks to stay sober? Make sense? What I need to do is get taken to a place so that the obsession to drink will be removed, and then I can be free. We got too many people. I guarantee you, sitting in this room right now, walking on eggshells around alcohol, afraid of the day that they're going to be triggered into drinking. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. If you're doing that, I'm telling you, you're not free from alcoholism. Come see me after the meeting. We'll visit. We'll chat. I would love to talk to you. The freedom that I finally got in 1987 because some men loved me enough to tell me the truth, it just changed my whole life. I was, my twin brother and I were alcoholics. Some of y'all know Myers, and he calls me the evil one, but he's as bad as they come. I got to tell you that. And I've got a little sister and a half sister, and my mom and my dad. My dad was an alcoholic. We caught the bullet from him, and I suppose my whole family. You could trace it back up. But high school, we started drinking, and you could see the walk like a duck, quack like a duck. It's a duck. And my little sister never had a problem. We laugh about it all the time, trying to get her to drink. You know, it's like, come on. And she's really, I don't know, she's a sweetheart, absolute sweetheart, but she never could get the hang of it, you know. She'd get a little drink and sip it, and she'd set it down, and we'd be watching us, Lisa, it's free, we bought it, you want to drink up, you know. And she says, no, it's just, it tastes a little strong for me, you know. And she'd sort of back, slide it back across, and it's like, man, it's just messed up. Lisa, take the little fruit and the umbrella out of it now and drink it, you know. And she went, you get hurt that way. Those umbrellas and them drink, you can lose an eye. No respectable alcoholic would ever drink like that. I mean, I'm hazards. You know, we just don't do that. I ended up in Houston in a food business and was pretty successful. But I started seeing a therapist early on. I'll never forget this old guy. He was downtown Houston. And I'm seeing him because I'm experiencing some anxiety. Y'all with us? And the symptoms of untreated alcoholism are pretty clear. Anxiety happens to be one of them. Depression is another one. And I'm seeing these doctors trying to figure out what the problem is. And of course, they're asking the same questions that all of you guys have been asked. Do you drink? Well, some. A couple. I'm in the food business. God damn, everybody drinks. What the hell? All the chefs, all the cooks. What, are you drinking excess? No, absolutely not. You do any other outside drugs? No, absolutely not. Why? Do I look at that? We're nuts, you know. He's checking. He said, "Chris, it could possibly be this." But anyway, I entered into this deal, and I started mid-70s, started eating the antidepressants, and the doctor started prescribing medication, and I'm doing therapy, and I, you know, people always draft us, you're knocking therapy, buddy. I mean, I am a product of great therapy. I love therapy, and I think anybody in this room that hasn't seen a therapist or is unwilling to do that, man, you want to get moved forward in your program. See a good therapist that understands what this is about. I guarantee you, they can crack you like an egg. And all of us have got stuff we're carrying around that we don't need to carry around, and they can help you. I mean, that's what these people did to me. But they're trying to explain my drinking via my external circumstances, and it's not really working. And long, very boring story short, I was one of those functioning alcoholics, guys. And one day I'm a sous chef at a big country club, and 6 months later I'm eating out of dumpsters behind the country club. Y'all follow? And then a month later I've got a great new job across town at another country club. I mean, I'm quite hireable, and I've never been fired from a job, and I have great work ethics. And I've never robbed a liquor store, and I never shot anybody, and I never prostituted myself, and I never lived on the street. You follow? Which was a real bummer, because I could have used all of that shit when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, moved up to North Texas, got married and moved up to North Texas and got a job at another country club. And I'm drinking myself spitless and doing dope and other outside issues. And I'm eating antidepressants on top, you know, on pills. I'm becoming quite toxic in the early 80s. And it was a social thing to do. I don't know. You know, you sit at these bars, it's what you talked about. What kind of medication are you on? And it's adult attention deficit disorder medication, and I'm just drooling, you know, I got in a little hassle with my wife, and I was loaded, she'd asked me to quit drinking. Basically, it was one of those first ultimatums that I ever got: quit drinking, or I'm out of here. And bless her heart, she had every right to back me into a corner like that, because I was a mess that night, and I promised her I'd go to Alcoholics Anonymous. My father had gone for a short period of time, and there was some harmony in our house, and I knew intuitively that was the place to go. And I checked the meeting schedule out, and I went. And 2 weeks later, I came home, and I'd had a beer on the way home, and my head had told me 2 weeks out, don't get drunk was what she told me not to do. She didn't say don't drink. She just said don't get drunk. And of course, what she told me not to do was don't drink. Y'all follow? And she smelled that. I'm a 2 week wonder, guys, and that's what drives us crazy. I mean, I can quit anytime I want. I do it often, you know, because I always start again, and that's the deal. I can stop the first week I quit drinking, guys. Everything is the y'all know that. I mean, the cars get washed and the house gets painted and we cook fresh chicken fried steak and everything's just great. You know, he's like, hey, you know, I should have done this years ago. Sex is better and you're back in a big house and everything's just. And about 2 weeks out, you with us, you're driving to work and you find yourself grinding. Oh, what's this? I must have a tooth. No, you're grinding your teeth again. That's exactly what's happening. You're coming unglued. It takes that little time for me, about the furthest away I can get from the drink. You with me? 7, 8 days. The further away I get, the worse my internal condition gets. Nobody wants to talk about that in Alcoholics Anonymous. They want to talk about the external. I got a job. I got a wife. I got a dog. I got a house. I got everything on the outside looks good. And it's clean. Dig? Inside, I'm coming apart. I'm not happy camper. And I go to work and I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. And I pick a fight with some little knucklehead that I don't even know and have words with the boss. And I'm just not. Baby, what's wrong? I thought you would be happy or sober. You seem to be a little cranky. My first wife, she came home one time with a bottle of vodka. It was one of my stints. I had 2 or 3 weeks sober. She set it down. Here, drink this. You know, cheap. I said, honey, I'm 3 weeks sober. I mean, you don't want me to lose my sobriety date, do you? She said, buddy, there's nothing sober about you. I like you better drunk. Drink this. Okay. Anything for the relationship, honey. Gunk, 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 and you hear an audible sigh of relief in North Texas, buddy, when that stuff hit my butt. That's exactly what we do. I'll pull off the side of the road and go into one of these 7-Elevens, these little stop-and-go places, and go back and get a Dr. Pepper and stop, look at that Dr. Pepper. I've done this 1,000 times. Stop, put the Dr. Pepper back, move over to the next cooler, grab a beer, because my head's saying, you can just have one beer. That's it. Okay, one. My head has never said, let's go get shit-faced. Never, never. Never. It's always one. Stop, put the beer, right, get it, take it. We're about halfway up to the deal. I'm thinking, turn around, go back, put that beer back, stop a second, grab the quart, go back up to the. If it's going to be one, it's going to be a big one. I haven't even got the stuff in my system right now, and I'm sitting up there, and I got a big cheesy grin, you know, and everything's just happy, happy, happy. People cutting in front of me to get lottery tickets. Some guy's got a bunch of checks to cash, money orders to send back to the old country. It's like it's no big deal. If you'd have done that this morning, I'd have shot your ass. Y'all understand that? But now, I haven't even got it in my system. I'm just holding up. Baby, go right on ahead. Everything's cool. I got all the time in the world. Go sit in that old pickup truck, crank it on like that, listen to that radio. Oh, my God, listen. I haven't heard that song in years. Everything, all the stars lining up. Carol, I love Carol King. Oh, shit. That's terrible. And I can't stop. Anyway, I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous after that little shoving match with my first wife, and she was a sweetheart, and I wanted to keep her, and went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we went into the rooms, and an old geezer asked me if I had a problem with alcohol. Didn't ask me if I was an alcoholic. He asked me if I had a problem with alcohol. He's qualifying me for membership into Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody gives a rat's butt if I'm a real alcoholic or not, which I think is a travesty. You'll follow? I said, yes, I got a problem with alcohol. I'm drunk now, and I got a quarter beer in the truck, and yeah. And they said, welcome. And they sat down in that dark room. Nobody said hi. Nobody said kiss my nothing. Just this old geezer asked me that question, and I said yes, and that was the end of it. And then we went around. It was like I wasn't there, and we talked about everything under the sun. There was six people in the room, and we talked about some lady's husband, and there was nothing about drinking. It was relationship stuff, and this guy was playing junior effing therapist and trying to explain to her why he did this, and this is just the coolest. And, man, I finished up, and we did the Lord's Prayer, and I left. And the wife was there on the porch when I got home. How was it? Was it? Did you? What? I said, man, I don't know, but I'll go back. We'll check it out. And I spent 7 years going back, checking it out. People want to grind their teeth about this stuff. Well, surely you heard somebody in 7 years give you the clear message. Surely I didn't. Everybody's given mixed messages. This nice guy right here, he's got a big book in front of him like that. And I go up to get coffee, and this guy slides up next to me and says, see that guy over there with that big book? I said, listen, stay away from him. He's one of them thumper bastards. He's just going to confuse you. All you need to do is just come to meetings and don't drink, and everything's going to be okay. Well, let me see if I can weigh this out. Okay, I'll come with you. Let's go. You'll follow? But you see, I'm the real McCoy, and I can't just go to a meeting and stay sober. Meetings don't treat alcoholism. Everybody in the world ought to start saying that from the podium. The person in this room that goes to the most meetings is not the person that's going to get sober. Maybe I'm wrong. God damn it. Let me look at this book one more time and see what it is. I've just been looking and looking and looking, and I can't find that where it says it, you know? Because you see, guys, we set people up to fail. You got this little fried pie crackhead, little alcoholic knucklehead comes in, doesn't have a job, and we tell him 90 meetings in 90 days. That's cool. He's got nothing else to do anyway. But you've got a nice housewife come in here. She's got babies at home, and she's got a job, and a husband that's sick or whatever, and we tell her, you got to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. When are you supposed to take care of the kids? The meetings were never intended to pull us away from life. It was intended to allow us to come back to life. But the best we can do, the best we can tell them in treatment is just go to meetings. I'm going to meetings. 90 meetings in 90 days. And I can't stay sober. Why? Because the further away I get from the alcohol, the worse my internal condition becomes. People don't want to hear that. That alcohol is not the problem. Alcoholism is the problem. It's two different things. Alcoholism is the progressive thing that makes me feel louder. The further away I get from the drink, the worse my internal condition becomes. More of us commit suicide in sobriety than we do out there drinking. Why? Because we're not well. We're not going to get well just going to a meeting. We've got to work the 12 steps. Bill Wilson thought it was important enough to write a book about it. Called it Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, who knew? God. I can't get so. We're talking junior therapy sessions at these open discussion meetings. The guys in Iceland call them dark tunnel meetings. You know, when you walk in and you can't see any light at the end of the... That's the meetings that we go into. We're playing junior therapists. Or we're telling war stories. And I'm going to say it real quick and move on. I don't want to belabor it. Guys, I get so much advice from this fellowship, it's not even funny. Y'all understand that? We were talking bikes. I've got my eye on a new bike. I got that from Dean today. I mean, I am blessed by all the people I know in this fellowship. I can call thousands of people all over the world with any problem I've got, and one of you will help me. Trained or untrained, but why do we have to do it in our meetings? Because that's not our primary purpose. Our primary purpose is to carry the message, the 12 steps, to the newcomer who still suffers. But we don't have time to do that because we're trying to fix your stupid divorce one more time. We need to stop doing that. Let me just ask you the question while I'm at it. Y'all swept here, didn't you? Let me ask you the question while I'm at it. Same stuff I'm going to be talking about tomorrow night down in Myrtle Beach. We've got this little thing called primary purpose, right, with singleness of purpose. You come into my little meeting over in Texas and start talking about dope, and somebody will nicely get up and say, buddy, come with me. We're going to go outside, and we're going to talk to you about what we do in AA and singleness of purpose, and we're going to shut you down because we don't want to talk about something that doesn't have to do with alcoholism. You with us? And should. It's our right to do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. You follow? But then the lady at the end wanting to talk about her problem with her weed eater, she can talk about that all day long. And nobody's going to say anything about it. But let me ask you the question. The 20-year-old kid sitting in the back that's been drinking too much and that wants to figure out if he's maybe really one of us, why should he have to sit there and listen? The old geezer shouldn't have to listen to us talk about smoking crack cocaine. Why in the hell should the 19 to 20-year-old kid have to listen to you talk about your freaking grandkids? Why? We go to meetings to talk about our problems. Why? I understand. There's a line in the book. We take one night a week, we do that. Let's do that. It's a great idea. We could call it pissing and moaning meetings, and every city could have one meeting a week where we're just going to go talk about everything under the sun. My dryer burned up, and listen, let me tell you, I know exactly where you can get a good dryer. We can talk about dryers and all that. But everybody thinks it's their right to come into an AA meeting and say, I can say anything I want in an AA meeting. That's the question I want to ask you. When you say that, and trust me, you're going to take my inventory after this is over, you'll be back down at Denny's tonight. Well, I don't know what about that little one-eyed son of a bitch, but I'm telling you this. But I'm telling you this. I can go to a meeting and say anything I want. And my question to you is, who gave you the right to do that? Who gave you the right to do that? When we're not trying to do that, we're trying to pull people with these stupid war stories. And I got to tell you something, guys. I hit it pretty hard sometimes about these war stories. Everybody in this room that's an alcoholic, you have your story. You have your story, and it's a good thing to have in a thing called a 12-step call. This little cat's down here, and he's drinking, and I want to go slide up next to him. I can't just start talking to him about God and the 12 steps. That's called leading with your chin. He's going to whip my ass. You know what I'm saying? He's not going to listen to that. But if I could sit up next to him and talk to him about some of my drinking experiences, and he understands that I understand I've been on the same spot that he has, then eventually, because they always do, you can just wait long enough, and y'all tell a few stories and laugh and joke about puking straight up and all that, and pretty soon, it's like fishing. Pretty soon, you just do like this, and pretty soon, he's going to look at you and say, but you don't seem to be drinking now. Oh, I'm not, buddy. I've been sober 20 years. Click, click, click. Don't pull it yet. Click, just like fishing. And then he's going to say, how did you do it? You set the damn hook. He wouldn't even listen to you if you hadn't told him the stories. Y'all fun? Okay, so we got an AA meeting. We're sitting there. All of us are sitting in the meeting room, and we're going to tell the story again and again and again and again. And all we have is our story. No, we just read it before we started this meeting. Little brother just read it on There's a Solution. We have a common problem and a common solution. And we know the little guy came and snuck in the back door, and we know we got him now for a minute. He's here. We don't have problems getting people to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the only game in town. We have trouble keeping people to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have too many people going in and coming out, going in and coming out, because they didn't hear the solution. And then when they relapse and walk back out, we're the first bunch as a fellowship to want to throw it back in their face and blame them. Well, you just didn't want it bad enough. He wanted it bad enough to screw up his courage and come in and pick up a desire chip. Why do we assume that the newcomer is going to know the questions to ask? All we want him to do is come in the room, and then we want to pull him with a vision of how cool life can be. Treatment centers have damn near killed us by watering this stupid message down. You're having a bad day? Go to a meeting and talk about it. Let me ask you to do me one big favor. Don't. You're having a bad day, call me. Sit out in the parking lot, wait till I get there. Wait till she gets there. Slide up next to her. Can I talk to you for a few minutes? And then tell them how to cow out the cabbage. Don't come into a meeting and use this as a dumping ground for your problem. The arrogance of us. I'm going to say it again. This is the only game in town. Everybody keeps waiting. I get emails from all over the world. When is the medical fraternity going to fix this problem of alcoholism? We know we've got so many cool meds coming down the room that people are getting in treatment. We got last count there were 24 anti-craving medications to help with this phenomenon of craving. Pretty cool deal. You know how many anti-obsession drugs we have? Not one. Not one. That's why they're coming in here. Make sense? Guys, we got great groups to go talk to and just visit. I don't want to come across rigid or dogmatic about this. If you're in a little group and there's seven or eight of you and you see each other every day and you just want to talk about your freaking weed eater, you go ahead. It's okay with me. It's, what's the harm? But if you've got a newcomer coming in there, pay attention. We bought little beater bikes not long ago. I used to be a competitive cyclist, and Patty and I sold them because I didn't have time because I was traveling so much. And Patty and I, we bought these little gay beater bikes. I don't know why they just. I just would hope nobody sees me riding this little upright guy kind of a thing. And anyway, we were in San Antonio, and we went. I got this soft. We live right downtown, and it was down there by the Alamo. And any of you guys ever been to San Antonio? If you go out just east of the Alamo, about a mile, is some of the poorest neighborhoods in San Antonio. It'll take your breath away. Active alcoholism on every corner. I mean, it is a tough place to watch this disease. And I was down there by myself going to the airport the next morning, I'm sober and got the coolest life in the world, and these people are hurting. And I was compelled to go to a meeting that night. I'd never been to this meeting, but I wanted to be in a room of my peeps, people that I could relate to. And I walked into this meeting and asked the guy at the door, says, is there a meeting in here at 7? He said, yes, and pushed by me to go to this. I said, oh, it's in a church. You know how the churches are, like a little rat maze. I don't know where it is. And I finally follow somebody up, and I walk into a room, and it was like deja vu. Dark, couches. Can't hardly see with us. People laying on the couches. What is this? One little light back over in the corner. I see a daily reflection sitting on the table. So I know that there's some kind of an AA thing going on here. And I says, is this an AA meeting? And the same guy that said, yes. He said, yes again. Didn't get up and say, my name is Chris Raymer. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Is this your first meeting? Can I get you a big book? The bathroom's over there. Would you care for some coffee? Kiss my ass? Didn't say nothing. Said, yes. I found my own seat. These people didn't know me from Adam. In certain circles, everybody knows me. In certain circles, I didn't know a person in the room. 7, 8, 9 people in that room. They all went around and shared out of a beautiful piece of literature called The Daily Reflections. We have a perfectly good book here. Well, never mind, but that's beside the point. And we went around the room, and they talked about relationships and this, that, and the other, and we never talked. Not one person said the word alcoholism. Not one person said the word God. Not one spiritual experience. Nothing. Jesus Christ. Was I the most important person there? Obviously not. Guys, I'm not saying this to make anybody uncomfortable. I'm saying everybody needs to go back to their group and get quiet. Some of you big book thumpers, and get quiet, sit in the back and don't say anything and just kind of close your eyes and listen to the meeting and see if the message we're carrying could really help somebody get sober. Because I'm sitting in these meetings listening to this stuff go on, and it's like everybody's talking about their day. They obviously knew each other and their relationships and all this cool stuff. But if I'd been a little drunk in that meeting, what could I have done? This was 2 weeks ago. And everybody wants to sit back and think, well, there's no problem here. Everything's just great. Then why in 1955, in the second edition, when it came out, we had a success rate in the United States of 75%. And today our success rate in the United States is less than 8%. It sucks. I'll tell you why. Eddie wrote it in the very front of the book when he talked to Bill Wilson. When he did his first 12-step call on Bill Wilson, and he's sitting down there working with Bill in the hospital. He said, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he'd worked with me. Faith without work was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if the alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. We think we're going to wait till you experience a low spot, and then we're going to help you fix that. That's not our job. Our job is to get you spiritually connected so God can take care of that. The arrogance of me to think I know what you need to do with your life. Oh, my gosh. That's why we have so many piss-poor sponsors out there as gurus sitting there. I'm going to tell you what to do. No, I'm going to help you work the steps so that you can have a vibrant spiritual experience, and then God can tell you what to do. And the instructions will come. That's what we were supposed to do. Everybody wants to make rocket science out of this. Real quick. In 1987, I tried to commit suicide, and I'm working for my twin brother. I can't cook anymore. I just can't stand that long. And my hands are shaking, and I've got kidney damage and liver damage, and I'm blaming everybody. And it's just mostly women. It's because they are, evil. Okay, but other. That's what we do. Somebody's got to take the blame, and that's exactly what I'm doing. And I'm playing the victim like a big dog. And I'm eating pills. I'm taking 7 pills a day. And I'm drinking on top of that. I'm in a mess. And I picked up a stack of return checks that night, and I opened them up. And I'm going to have to go to my sister-in-law, and she's going to have to bail me out one more time. Bill, you just turned 35. That's when I was 35. And a cold November night. And I went to the medicine cabinet, pulled down some pills, and just without no notes, no fanfare, just tried to check out. And nothing romantic about it, guys. I didn't want to die. I just didn't want to feel the way I was feeling anymore, and I was done. You let some people down it's like you get tired of it after a while. You let them down about 1,000 times. I've been to treatment. I've been to therapy. I brought everybody's hope up, and I've dropped it in the toilet one more time. And I'm just done being a fool. I'm done people laughing at me. I'm done not being comfortable in my skin. I'm at the jumping off place. I heard a voice that night that said, "Don't do this, go back to AA." And I heard it a couple of times, and I made myself sick, and I laid down on the bed, and I heard it one last time that night. It says, "Don't do this, go back to AA." And I'm arguing with a voice, because I've been to AA, thank you very much. Meeting makers make it. I've done, and I'm not. And the next morning, I heard it one last time, and I went to work, and I went to a doctor at noon, and we started a detox protocol. And at 6 o'clock, I left work and went to this AA meeting I'd never been to before. I'd been to the outside. A guy had 12-stepped me 3 years earlier, and he tried to get me to come to this meeting, and I wouldn't go. But now I was ready. I was quick on the way home, and I didn't know anybody in there. He said, "Don't go in there if you're not ready to get sober, because these people won't mess with you. They're good eggs, but they're all little thumpers." And I wasn't really sure what that was, but it sounded nasty, so I didn't. And I walked in, sure enough, and they were all thumpers, and they were all smoking back in the day. You know, them long shotgun meetings, and the ceiling's lower, and they've all got just a mouthful of cigarettes and soaking them all down. We ruined it for the smokers today, guys. We used to be able to smoke in AA meetings, but we can't anymore because we ruined it. We couldn't just smoke one. Anyway, but I walked in, they were laughing, just like we're doing now. You know, it's real lit up in this meeting, and it wasn't this old dim little candlelight meeting shit. This was rock on. And everybody's laughing. Sure enough, everybody's got big books in their lap in front of them, and they're all heads looking. They're laughing. I know they're laughing at me, and I'm feeling real self-conscious. You know how we get. We don't feel good anyway. And I got this eye patch that's always crooked. It stays crooked now anyway, but it's just like you don't know if it's an eye patch or an earmuff, you know. And I got a bunch of body weight, 40 pounds of body weight on me is right up here, and I got kidney damage and liver damage. I mean, I'm bleeding internally, for heaven's sakes. And food's always, I got a big beard and food. And we called it snack. Unwholesome as could be. I hadn't bathed in days, and I walked in the door, and they're laughing. I says, "Man, this is just too much for me. I'm sensory overload." And I start to back out, and this little girl slides up, 19-year-old girl, slid up behind me, walked in my blind side. I didn't see her. And she walked in my belt loop, and she said, "Sit down, cowboy. You're not going anywhere." It's how God works. Billy, if you'd come up, I'd have just shoved you out of the way. Oh, hairy leg boy. I mean, no, I wouldn't want to pick up a fight, but you're not going to stop me. I'm going to the truck. I've already made up my mind. And this little 19-year-old girl snags me by the belt loop. Her sponsor's seen me fixing to leave, and she said, "Get him." And she did. And I'm going to say it, and I'll say it again tomorrow night, and every night I share. If this little girl had been off in some little young adult meeting talking about young adult things, I'd have been dead. But she was in mainstream Alcoholics Anonymous doing what she was supposed to do, trying to help a drunk. I'll forever be grateful to her. She set me down at that table, and the chairperson looked up and realized he'd recognized me and seen me up in North Texas picking up chips for years. And he did something amazing. I got to say, just He took charge of the meeting. The meeting was an open discussion. They had a topic out of the book. We said, we've got a newcomer in here. Let's go around and share the miracles of us, what happened to us as a result of working the steps. He didn't say, let's tell Chris how we got here, because I don't give a shit how you got here. Y'all understand that? And neither does the newcomer. They don't care. They want to know, is this worth it? Can I wake up in any time in the foreseeable future and not want to drink? They want to know that. These people went around the room that night and they laughed their butts off and they talked about getting their credit cards back and they talked about buying houses and they talked about getting their health and going back to school and doing all the cool stuff. Lady down at the end of the sketching, and I'm a big art fan, and she was talking about sculpting and the miracles that had happened as a result of getting sober and staying sober. At the end of the meeting, they asked me if I was going to do this deal, and I picked up a chip. And there was an old geezer came up. He's long passed away, but he had them old glasses like this, and he came up and he had a book, old busted, you know the kind I'm talking about, duct tape on the outside. He'd open it so much like that. He said, buddy, I just need to ask you one quick question. Have you got a minute? And I said, absolutely. And he said, the book asked me to ask you this question. I said, I've been in AA for 7 years, and nobody's done this. He said, are you done? Because this is for keeps. I made the mistake of saying something along the lines of, well, one day at a time. He says, I'm not interested in that. We do life one day at a time. The book doesn't say we stay sober one day at a time. No, it doesn't say that. It says we have a daily reprieve, daily, every day, two different things. This idea that I can keep myself sober a day at a time is one of the reasons that this message has gotten so watered down. They said, we live life one day at a time. Buddy, one day at a time, we're going to show you how to do this. And you're going to have this miracle, and the obsession's going to go away. And if you'll keep doing it, you'll stay sober till the cows come home, and you can stop picking up these goddamn desire chips. And he had me. Hook, line, and sinker. News to me. Guys, here's what happened. The next day, they brought me back to the meeting, and we got on our knees in the back after a meeting, and we did a third step prayer. It wasn't this long. Let's work on our second and third for a few weeks. It was none of this. He qualified me that morning that I was an alcoholic. We got on our knees in the back, asked me if I had any problem with God. Nope, I didn't. Would you do a third step? He explained it to me. We did a third step. We went to lunch. Y'all should see your faces. Oh, my God, I could never do that. That's why you keep picking up chips. I don't know what to tell you. So many of us in this room, that's exactly where we end up. We went to lunch and came back, and he said, Chris, start writing a little four-step stuff. And I'd been around AA long enough to know that, no, I can milk this bastard for 9 months. I'm not going to. Time out. No. He said, Chris, you're not going to finish it. We're going to show you how to do this. But right now, while you're sitting at home shaking, why don't you just make a list of the people you hate? Said, your name's on it already. And I did it. And I did it. And I started working on it. 2 weeks later, I've got a completed fourth step, and I'm ready to do a fifth step. And I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck, and it dawns on me that the obsession to drink is lifted. And I'm in a parking lot where my dope dealer lives, and I'm surrounded by liquor stores and restaurants I have tabs in, and it's like I don't want to drink. It's not I don't want to drink. It's pocket full of money, and I've recovered. And from that point on, I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic, because that's exactly what the big book asked me to do. We'll always be recovering. No, you and your counselor will always be recovering. The big book says you can recover, and that's what happened. When the obsession to use lifts, you're as recovered as you're going to get. Make sense? Guys, I'm going to spend the rest. It took me years, guys, to get some of this stuff off my back. Y'all understand that? We paint this picture that I turned into a little sunbeam for Jesus 2 weeks in, and everything was just great. I owed the IRS. I owed credit cards. It took me years. I had health problems. I had psychological problems. I was in therapy forever. Y'all understand? When the fellowship gathered around me and helped me do that. But the obsession to use lifted like that as a result of me getting off my butt. And those old geezers in that meeting that loved me enough to tell me the truth. They loved me enough to tell me the truth. They didn't just say, keep coming back. They said, buddy, we need you here tonight, 7 o'clock. We're going to the halfway house. You come with us. I said, well, I'm not ready to speak. He said, no shit. We didn't need your mouth. We need your back. See those big books over there? You need to pick them up and you need to come. But he got us involved. You with us? For years, what they've done is just let me sit on my butt until my head told me it was time to go drink. And these guys got me active. If you don't have a job in Alcoholics Anonymous, guys, whatever group you're in, if you don't have a job, you ain't going to stay. I don't. There's no such thing as insignificant jobs. Anything that you're doing in here to help us carry the message is a needed, vital thing. But if you don't have a job, you're going to get bored with this crap and you're going to leave. And those people understood that. We got people all over the world tonight in AA meetings telling the newcomer that they can't do anything until they've been sober 6 months. You're too young to sponsor anybody. God, thank God nobody told Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob that. We've gotten better at this, folks. Why should we be not doing it? A little guy's had a spiritual experience. He's worked through the steps. He could turn around and transmit that to somebody else. That's what that's about. Real quick, I got 5 more minutes. All right. We've got what I'm seeing in the United States right now, all over the world, is we've got these, our meetings, we've got these little unsigned death packs in our little sponsorship lineages, in our little groups. You know, y'all all go to meetings together and you form this little pact. And it's not that we sat down and talked about it. It's just that it's been worked out over years of understanding, silent communication. I'm not going to call you on your crap, Billy, and you're not going to call me on my crap. And we're going to be best friends. And we're going to play golf and we're going to go to the races. You with us? These death packs. You start acting like a fool, but I'm not going to correct you because if I do that, you'll correct me. You see, that's not how this worked out. That's not how Alcoholics Anonymous started. Here's what we're seeing all over the United States, especially in the United States, all over the world, places I go. We're watching thousands of people in our fellowship relapse around prescription medication. Prescription medication that most of us knew better to take, and we were surrounded by people that watched us take it, and nobody said anything because nobody wanted to piss anybody off. And again, I'm going to go back to the old geezer that stopped me in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1987 that loved me enough to tell me the truth. A real friend will tell you got a little boogie in your nose. You know that? I don't have anything, do I? Isn't that the truth? But that's exactly what we sit in meetings and watch this stuff go on. Watch somebody make a fool of themselves and he's chasing this old girl over here and doing this over here. We've got all this stuff. Well, it's none of my business. You know what? Anything I do, folks, is your business, as far as I'm concerned. You know, these death packs, I've watched kill so many people, it's not even funny. My grand-grand-grand sponsor, Paul M. out of Chicago, passed away Sunday, 62 years sober. We're losing the old geezers by the gazillions, folks. There needs to be a bunch of people need to pick up the slack and help us do this. Take some cojones to be in the spiritual path. M. Scott Peck wrote a great book called The Road Less Traveled. Road less traveled is the spiritual path. Why is it less traveled? Because it's a bitch. No, isn't it the truth? To do the right thing, to stand up for what's right and say what needs to be said, I make it sound like we're all just a bunch of mean people. You know, it's like, guys, I don't go into an AA meeting and talk like this. I'm talking to a room of a few hundred people. I'm in an AA meeting. I'm as nice as I can be and quiet, and I'm going to share my experience with you. But if I see you doing something stupid, I'm going to say, buddy, let's get a cup of coffee. No, tonight. And we're going to sit down and we're going to visit about it. If I'm going to work with you, that's what we're going to do. Because it's easy for us to get out there, get complacent. You'll follow? I worked the steps. I had a spiritual experience. We've got a fellowship that are living off spiritual experiences they had 18 years ago. That's what the daily part's about. I need to keep this current. If you're sitting there, blah, you're thinking about taking antidepressants, you're irritable, restless, and discontent, there's a reason. It's called untreated alcoholism, and you might want to sit down next to somebody. It doesn't have to be an old-timer. Maybe one of these new bucks that are all excited about the work. Ask them to take you back through the work. Have a new experience with this. It won't hurt you to do another four-step. You might see some stuff you didn't see the first time. Does that make sense? I'll close with this. I had an old geezer in a group that I got sober in. There was two or three groups there in the little small town, and I would go over on Wednesday nights to see this guy, and he's, again, long since dead. He was about 30 years sober then, and he and I are in the room after the meeting, after the 8 o'clock, it's 9 o'clock, and we're cleaning up coffee cups. It's back in the day before Styro. We're cleaning coffee cups and ashtrays, emptying ashtrays, and all the guys that I came with, all my buds, they're downstairs chasing their futures, and new fodder for four steps. And they're down there chasing women and smoking and having a great time. They're a part of the fellowship. But I'm watching this old geezer, guys. I've eaten out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. I don't want to go back to dumpsters. Y'all understand that? I don't want to go to the day where every day I'm thinking about committing suicide, driving into a damn gravel truck coming this way. I like being happy. And I'm watching this old guy because I want to make sure I got this and see what's up. And he's washing these cups, and he turns around, and he's got his old towel, and he's wiping it off. And I noticed that his eyes are all kind of misty, and I said, "Buddy, are you okay?" And he said, "Yeah, yeah. Listen, I heard you share tonight, and I just got to tell you, I've been intending to talk to you. I mean, you're sitting in here, everybody else is downstairs, and you're collecting coffee cups. You know, 6 months sober, you're in here doing this. And I just got to tell you, buddy, we so appreciate you being a part of our group." And he says, "In fact, I've just been negligent to tell you." He said, "We need you." Shit. We need you. Today, best we can come up with is keep coming back. And this guy looked me in the eye with tears in his eyes and said, "We need you." Y'all understand the legacy? Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, the first guys that got sober, people died coming up with this message. The thousands of people to try to figure out how this thing worked out. So many went before us. We got 2 million people in our fellowship. Most of them sitting on the side of the dang trench looking in. "Hey, you boys ain't digging quite fast enough down there. Why don't you do it this way? Hey, you boys over there, that ain't conference approved. Why don't you do it this way?" Yeah, everybody taking everybody's shots. What we need is a few more people down in the trench digging. Being responsible. When the meeting starts to turn to shit, somebody should say, "Excuse me, boy, we got off topic. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but we can talk about that after the meeting. Right now, we're going to need to go back to page 17 and remember what our common problem and our common solution is. Who wants to share again?" Stop them in a heart. But no, no, no. Nobody wants to offend anybody. We just rather see the whole room get drunk. Y'all see that? It's time to stand. It's time to take a stand. I'm going to tell you the same thing that old geezer told me nearly 22 years ago. Every single person in this room, God, I've been so touched since I got here. Talking to a bunch of you guys at dinner and just so many of you guys that had traveled and came up and introduced yourself and heard CDs and stuff. I'm going to tell you, every single one of you, we need you. The old cats that are staying sober continues to come back. I'm going to thank you from the bottom of my heart for not leaving the fellowship in disgust. Thank you for staying. All of you little young guys in here that people have put down. "Oh, you ain't sober long enough. But you've come with your book ready to work." Thank you for doing that. I don't think I've shared in the last 10 years that I haven't thanked the women in this fellowship for sticking. Number one email I get from all over the world is people looking for women sponsors. Lots of women sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. They can tell you the best places to go buy that fragrance, that special fragrance, but they can't tell you how to finish a four-step. And those are the people we need. Everybody thinks this is a popularity contest. But I just want to be not. It's not. You can be popular and effective. And we need you in the trench, helping us carry this spiritual message to the newcomer. I'm so grateful that y'all asked me to speak. If I can ever help you, you let me know. Thank you.
No, really, Chris, tell us what you think. Can we give another round of applause?